Here's a big idea that you already know, but I want to reiterate. If there is an effect, there is a cause. If there is a cause, there will be an effect. Today I want to talk about ill health. What explains ill health? And this is going to be part one of a two-part series. Ill health is the effect of some cause, maybe several causes. Then, when it exists, ill health can actually appear to be and be the cause of something else. Lots of times people go, ill, so what caused it? I know, here's the treatment. What caused it? Here's the treatment. What caused it? Here's the treatment. It makes sense to figure out the cause to prevent a recurrence as compared to, here's a treatment that will mitigate your symptoms, which is sometimes another way of saying, you'll not notice the pain you're in. It's like, is that the solution to the problem? No, it's not a solution to the problem. It's not a cure. I think it makes more sense to go looking for the cause, change the cause, and by doing that, change the effect. A common, I'll say, pseudo-explanation of ill health is this. It's due to aging. To me, people who throw that explanation out to a patient or a client or to themselves are choosing to be unaware. They make up a false answer as to the cause and quickly slam the door to their mind shut. Prevents any kind of further understanding from entering because I got the answer. It's due to aging. And if they left the door open, what is the cause? If they asked the question, what is the cause? That inquiry would naturally draw to them more awareness, more insight, more knowledge. In life, pretty much everything could be superficially described as due to aging. A small child in a crib, standing. That's due to aging. Because he couldn't do that a week ago, but since he's aged, he can do it. She can do it. A baby holding its head up by itself, unsupported, eating solid food, speaking, walking, doing arithmetic, tying one's shoes. And a million other human activities could all be attributed to aging. Other ways to refuse to look at the real cause of ill health could be, and if we wanted to stay in the area of time and aging, could be to say, my clock, because that hand's going around, my calendar, that one that advances from January to February to March, that is the cause of my ill health. Most of us know that is not true. And you know it's true. It's not true because if the passage of time is the cause, we would all be at effect. But why are some old people, really old people, extremely healthy, and some very young people extremely unhealthy? It's like, whoa, that just shoots the age theory right in the foot. And people in between demonstrate excellent health or terrible health. Like, maybe it's not the clock, the calendar, or time that's really the cause of ill health. In a conversation with a friend, medical doctor client, the other day, he told me that babies born in America today have about 270 foreign chemicals in their bodies at birth, to include Scotch Guard and Teflon. It's like, that's probably not that natural. That's probably not that natural. In some places I've lived, two come to mind that are notable. You couldn't drink the water. You couldn't drink the water out of the faucet. I lived in Houston, Texas. The water smelled like a swamp. It was so stinking, you couldn't get it up to your mouth. Now, Texas is known for its tremendous pollution, and Houston is notable even in that infamous way, that the pollution level there is off the charts. So you smell the water, and you're like, what is in this? What is in this water? What chemicals there? What's making this stuff stink? So a person who has some financial alternative can buy bottled water, but what's causing this water to stink? In Florida, where I live now, the water from the faucet also smells, and it tastes terrible. You can take chemicals, like, there's no swamp smell. I don't smell the Everglades, but I do smell the chemicals, like chlorine and fluoride, but maybe others that I can't distinguish, but they're there. That anybody with a nose or taste bud ought to be able to detect something's wrong with this water. It shouldn't have all this chemical smell or taste. So the real question is, what do these chemicals do to the human body? And when you look at the common epidemics that are going on, obesity and other things, you go, maybe these chemicals are factors. Marianne and I and our dog Nikki moved to Virginia a few years ago to take care of my sister Patty for the last 4 years of her life. And it was in an area that grew lots of tomatoes, field after field after field. And the water comes from wells. My nephew Dan, whose house we stayed in for those 4 months, said, Uncle Tom, they put 14 applications of sides, C-I-D-E-S, pesticides, fungicides, insecticides, on those tomatoes before they are picked and go to market. Oh, no, none of those poisons get in the tomato. Don't worry about that. Oh, yeah? You sure? What about those that wash off and go into the ground? Where do they go? They go into the water that people end up drinking. I can recall as a kid, there was a neighbor, a woman who was, we considered at the time, fanatical in her opposition to fluoridation of water. She saw that as a conspiracy of the worst sort. Anne Montgomery, she was so opposed to that, but it didn't do any good in that we ended up with fluoridated water. Some people swear, oh, this is prevents tooth decay, maybe even helps bones be stronger. Some doctors would say, and Dr. Jerry Tennant is one of them, is that fluoride in toothpaste and in water interferes with the function of the body because it prevents iodine from being taken into the body and used effectively because it occupies the receptor sites. So literally, it gets to the place that iodine needed to get to. And because it occupies that space, the iodine are like, I can't get into the body to help this person develop effectively. And there's a cascading, a domino effect of all kinds of things. To me, that represents chemical poisoning. Chemical poisoning is an explanation of ill health. Now, besides all the wonderful things that fluoride was going to do for our teeth and bone, when somebody started to investigate how that came about, they went, wait a minute. This was a marketing idea of somebody who said, we have, in our manufacturing processes, have produced a tremendous amount of waste product, fluoride. And it's piling up. We got to figure out something to do with this fluoride. What do we do? And they turned it into, put it in the water and give it to the people. And so a waste product turned into an amazingly profitable chemical, and they didn't have to worry about storage anymore. It's like, yeah, they're drinking it. Good for them. Or not good. I've read some stuff that says, oh, we got to have this. We got to give fluoride to infants. I just read this the other day. Got to give it to infants. And I've also read stuff that said Harvard and other reputable universities go, wait a minute. We've done studies. This stuff impacts negatively the development of the human brain. You are stunting the development of the human brain by putting this stuff into infants and small children. It's like, oh. So, I don't know, it doesn't sound too appealing to me if this is scientifically actual to have, man, that dumb kid really, really has a nice set of teeth. You know what? There's got to be a better way than that. Dumber people are less effective at creating health or making good decisions or contributing to society or being effective at raising families. I recently read an article that said 1.7 million Americans die each year. 1,700,000 Americans die each year. And more than 70% of them die from lifestyle illnesses. Said another way, our behaviors are killing us. We are killing ourselves through our behaviors. Our behaviors explain ill health. Our suffering, it explains our unhappiness and much of the suffering and unhappiness that we cause to others. Look at these things. Cancer, diabetes, coronary disease, obesity, addictions, chemical diseases, etc. are symptoms of our behaviors. Autoimmune diseases today are a huge problem. Huge problem. We could say that our immune systems are recognizing us, they're seeing us as the enemy, and then they attack various parts of our bodies. Like, wait. How did I become the enemy? That question will be explored a teeny bit today and some more in part two. But simply put, the immune system is designed to recognize, attack, and neutralize foreign proteins that enter the body outside of the digestive tract. Obviously, you and I eating a hamburger, if you indulge in such things, is putting foreign protein into the body. But our normal digestive capabilities convert this food into usable energy from those proteins, and the cells now can operate with that energy. When the proteins and the chemicals, and this is a part of the problem with the chemicals, that those things get into areas of the body that are naturally off limits. Stuff shouldn't go there, but because unnatural synthetic stuff has been designed and we're eating factory food all the time, it's like our bodies are like, what is this stuff? And it's penetrating into off-limits areas. And when it does, guess what? The immune system goes haywire. High alert. For those of us who travel in airplanes, we know what TSA is, right? All of this security and searching and scanning and all that stuff is. Our bodies go on high alert when those barriers are penetrated by proteins and chemicals. Gluten. That's a protein. And it's now recognized in lots of people as a major factor in illness. Some people will say, well, unless you've got a full-blown case of celiac disease, you don't have a gluten problem. It's like, that's kind of like saying to somebody, until your house is reduced to ashes, you don't really have a fire problem. It's like, wait. How about mid-process? How about just before the symptoms flare into physical manifestation? Oh, good point. So it is this spectrum of negative reactions to gluten that we could be paying attention to. And on the advice of that same friend, client, medical doctor, I've gone gluten-free. It's like, you know what? You know what? When a person you respect makes these kind of comments, you're like, I ought to take this seriously, and instead of ignoring it like I had been doing, through acceptance of my own unawareness. I was talking before, that person who doesn't seek to understand more, that was true. That was true. That was me. And now, on a gluten-free eating regimen, I don't really notice much, losing a few pounds, but you know, maybe other good things are happening, and maybe even more importantly, maybe some bad things are not happening as a result of that. Personally, this is my belief, this is an opinion, that gluten today is not the gluten of 50 years ago. The gluten of 50 years ago was part of, say, the wheat and other grains, that was before the chemical industry took control of our food supply. And wheat was more or less natural. The same stuff that mankind has been eating for thousands of years now has been so chemically distorted that when it gets into the body, it's like, what is this stuff? And our naturally designed systems are not up to preventing these wickedly distorted, and maybe wickedly is a good word, wickedly distorted proteins now past the naturally designed barriers and poison us. When you think about the need for food, water, rest, and air, those four things, you quickly realize that, the air we breathe is the most important. That's the most important of these four items. You know how I know? Because we can go for hours and sometimes days without water, without food, and without rest. But only seconds without air. Now, if you want to work at it, you could probably go for a couple of minutes holding your breath so that... and hold your breath and say, I'm going without air. No, you're not, because you filled yourself with air, and that air is what is being used by the cells of the body in its natural processes. And the absence of air, we'd be in big trouble. There's so much marketing emphasis, and rightfully so, on food. What you eat, what not to eat, all the factory foods that you should be eating, the snacks and the junk food and all the healthy stuff and the organic stuff and gluten-free and this and all that. Yep. That's a good idea. You already know about water, not only the stuff that I just talked about, Houston and Florida, water quality, but that's true in a lot of places. But The water industry, bottled water. Remember when it came out, I don't know, 25, 30 years ago, maybe, Perrier and Avion, they were like, why would you buy water? Why would you buy water? I lived in Manhattan back in the 79 and throughout the 80s, in the low 90s, it was like New York City water, Manhattan water was so excellent, it compared favorably to bottled water. Actually tastes better, had less pollutants in it for some reason. It's like, wow, this is excellent. And I was like, why are people buying water? You can get this delicious stuff right out of the tap. Not true in a lot of places. That bottled water industry is huge. I have a pet peeve. I go to a restaurant and want bottled water. It ends up coming from Fiji is about a million miles away. France or Italy, that's almost a million miles. It's like, whoa. We don't have any water in the United States that I can buy, bottled water. You know, like, seems rare. I don't know how they can afford to get water from those far-off places to America and be sold in a restaurant. It's like, wait a minute, how is that possible? Strange to me. The element of rest, everybody knows how important that is, and then we turn around and try to overcome the need for it by Starbucks and sugar and chocolate and, 5-day, wow, probably could sell a ton of 5-day energy drink. You won't have to blink or take a nap for 5 days. That stuff would sell out in a minute because we think we should do away with rest. Doing away with rest, that's an explanation of ill health. We don't want to do away with that. We don't want to do away with that. And the bedding and the mattress industry, and they seem to be almost on every street down here, bedding stores and mattress stores and it's like Bed Bath & Beyond, they would say, don't do away with rest. Don't do away with rest. Not only is it good for your health, it's good for our bottom line. It's like, yeah, good point. Good point. It is when a lot of maintenance occurs in the body. But breathing, who's promoting this most important body function? Well, I do know that I see pharmaceutical ads for inhalers, Advair or other things for people with asthma or COPD or emphysema. Those are treatments. That doesn't really speak to the general population breathing healthily. We hear and read a lot of things about the danger of smoking, but that's basically talking about the poisons, the chemicals in the paper and that have been added to tobacco, but not with regard to that aspect that impacts our breathing. Let me be obvious and silly to see where this line of thinking could take us. Dead people don't breathe. Living people do breathe. It appears that we might be able to conclude, I'm going to make up this conclusion, that the less you breathe, the faster you move toward the dead end of the spectrum. And the more you breathe, the faster you move toward the living end of the spectrum. But that's false. That's false. The evidence has been proven to us in certain examples where elite runners, elite athletes, prime condition, like Jim Fix, fall over dead with a heart attack. It's like, well, that dude definitely was breathing. He was breathing more than the average guy. He was running all the time. What's that about? I think that's an indication that there must be a deeper explanation of ill health. Breathing is a mechanical function. We'll just assume that for a moment. It's a mechanical function. Expansion, contraction of lungs. It's mechanical. I mean, even in hospitals, I've seen people on breathing machines. What's keeping that guy alive? That machine. It's breathing for him? Yep, it's breathing for him. Okay. And that breathing, in that mechanical sense, is like the functioning of the billows. The contracting, expansion, contracting, expansion. If we wanted to talk about the lungs, we would say contracting, expansion, exhaling, inhaling, exhaling, inhaling. We go, But there's got to be something more to that. And why don't we ask these questions? What is being inhaled? What is being exhaled? And why is that important? I think the answers are, it's primarily the oxygen that the body is seeking when it inhales. And regular air is 21% oxygen, 78% nitrogen, and teeny smidgens of various other gases. So that's what the cells are looking for, some sort of source of oxygen. So that exchange comes in. We take in the air, that 21% oxygen, 78% nitrogen. An exchange occurs that the oxygen goes into the body and carbon dioxide comes out, the nitrogen levels essentially stay the same, and it's that transference in and out. It's like, oh, that's an important thing to our health. Yeah, yeah. People say, well, in that case, I would love to have pure oxygen. No, you wouldn't. No, you wouldn't. Can't really breathe pure oxygen. It causes all kinds of problems. It's more than the body can handle. Balance is a key concept in health. And oxygen is combustible. I'll say even explosive. And it's used in rocket fuel. That might be a clue. Yeah. But oxygen powers the cells of the body. Now, I think we can definitely draw these conclusions. Dead people don't have enough oxygen in their cells, and this may explain why they're dead. Living people have more oxygen in their cells, and this may explain why they're alive. Brain dead people, you know, medically diagnosed, that person laying there on a machine that's breathing for them, brain dead. Saying not enough oxygen is getting to the cells of the brain. The oxygen deprivation has often caused that condition. And the heart attacks in elite runners has been attributed to blocked oxygen flow to the heart muscles. And they suffer from that. But boom. Lack of oxygen in the cells of the body explains ill health. Everything that exists is electromagnetic. Everything. That includes the sun, the moon, the earth, you, me, everything. That includes the cells of our bodies. There's no doubt that the cells draw to themselves the substances they need for growth, nutrition and nourishment, healing and protection. Just think, growth, cells grow? Well, I don't know, I started as a fertilized ovum, I think you did too, and we grew, cells reproduced. It's like, oh yeah, I've scratched myself, I hurt myself, I cut myself, I crashed into things, and I healed. And sometimes I didn't. It means I was protected. And my immune system is part of that protection system, just like it is for you. Here's something that seems pretty simple and obvious. One requirement of electromagnetism is electricity. Electricity. It's like, yeah, that's right. Yeah. That electricity is a determinant in the power of a magnet. I got that. I think I had that in the seventh grade. Yeah, electromagnetism, got it. Oxygen in the cell produces voltage, produces electricity, and that voltage powers cell metabolism, cell multiplication, the ability to ingest through the cell membrane, the ability to excrete waste products back out through the cell membrane. Gotta have the power to do that. And the good news is, a healthy cell has sufficient voltage to do that. The bad news is, an unhealthy cell doesn't have sufficient voltage. Insufficient cellular voltage explains ill health. In normal conversations nowadays about health and illness, the subject of pH often comes up. The pH scale refers to levels of alkalinity and acidity in liquids. In this case, the fluids in the body and the liquids that we would ingest, we would drink. The scale goes from 0 to 14, and 0 to 7 is considered acidic. And from 7 to 14 is considered alkaline. Now, certain areas of the body have different levels of acidity, alkalinity. Stomach acid, gastric acid, which contains hydrochloric acid, and is that hydrochloric acid is really an important factor in the digestion of proteins. You hear me mention proteins before that escape the intestinal tract and wreak havoc and send the immune system into overdrive and all-out war. Yep, that's it. And that gastric acid has a pH of 1 to 2. The scale goes from 0 to 14. 1 to 2. You know that stuff is, that's potent acid. Outside the digestive tract, though, the pH is closer to 7.4 in healthy person. Oxygen levels are higher in alkaline solutions, lower in acidic solutions. Voltage is higher in alkaline solutions and lower in acidic solutions. And the pH is higher in alkaline solutions and lower in acidic solutions. I could have just said oxygen levels and voltage levels and pH levels are directly related to one another. If one is higher, the other two are higher. If one is lower, the other two are lower. In 1931, a medical doctor, Dr. Otto Warburg, won a Nobel Prize for proving that cancer cells can only grow in oxygen-deprived environments. His discovery could be stated this way, too. Cancer can only develop in a low-voltage, low-pH environment. Low oxygen, low pH, low voltage. That's where, that's the condition that's necessary. We already know a person whose brain has been deprived of oxygen can be considered, or in actuality, be retarded. Ah, that person's brain dead. Ah, they're not thinking. They're not cognitively normal. They're not functioning right. And you go, So, if brain cells are deprived of oxygen, the brain is harmed. If a cell is deprived of oxygen, it is harmed and has the potential to become cancer cells. You could say a cancer cell, sometimes I've heard people say cancer cells are really smart. They're really smart. No. How is that possible? You don't get smart with the absence of oxygen. I think it's retarded. They got to be retarded, right? They don't recognize that they're a part of the whole. A cancer cell doesn't recognize it's a part of the whole. And they'll actually destroy, through their reproduction, the environment they're a part of, to the point of killing the environment and themselves. Like, that doesn't sound all that bright. That doesn't sound all that intelligent. I mean, it would... Just think of that. That would require, like, human beings destroying the Earth. Now, we're not dumb enough to do that, are we? That lack of oxygen in the cells explains ill health. There's a lot of talk about illness being due to our genetics. This tendency to give power away to genes, to me, it's typically human, because we have this tendency. I want to blame external forces and factors that are not under my influence, or that's what I perceive. Or I want to pretend I don't have control over those things, and I'm thinking that must come from our prehistoric primitive ancestors, their lack of awareness. I don't understand what... why things are. I don't understand this concept of cause and effect, so I'm going to make magic, bad, must be, I don't know, and then they create the god that's up on a cloud or some other mysterious forces in the universe that are causing so many different things. What caused the earthquake? Somebody doesn't like us? What caused rain? Somebody doesn't like us? What causes drought? Somebody doesn't like us? Okay. I'm thinking, that's a lack of awareness of how life actually functions. It's lack of awareness about cause and effect. It's lack of awareness of this power we call God. It's lack of awareness of spiritual principles that apply to life on planet Earth. Superstitions. You think these things are popular? I bet if you read a list of those things, it would be off the charts, scary, and amusing at the same time. But they were created at some point by somebody. Like, I'm trying to explain why that occurred, and this is my idea. And then somebody goes, I accept that, I embrace that, and I'm going to repeat that. That's the explanation for the effects that we've encountered. Yep, that's it. That's it. I heard these as a kid. Step on an ant, and it's going to rain. Black cat walks across your path in front of you. Uh-oh, look out. Break a mirror, your next 7 years is spoken for. Step on a crack and break your mother's back. How about this one? Still going on today, alive and well. Disobey God, and you're going to go to hell. I had three older sisters. Girls who wash their hair when they have their periods will catch a cold. What? Huh? Never understood that as a little boy. I don't know if that's still in existence. I had an ex who responded to this one. Owls hooting at night outside your window. That means somebody close to you is going to die. Really? Doesn't it just mean a owl is hooting? No. It means, okay, eat meat on Friday. I grew up as a Catholic. If you ate meat on Friday, God is going to be angry. Now, God changed his rules, or her rules, or its rules, and said, no, go ahead. You could eat meat. And here's another powerful superstition, probably from our cave times. What the neighbors think about us is important. What will the neighbors think of us? I certainly want to live my life according to that fear. As a child, I was afraid of a boogeyman in the closet or under the bed. I didn't know where he was at any one moment, but he's in one of these two places. It never occurred to me to ask this question. I thought of this the other day. Hey, boogeyman, if you're so powerful, what are you doing in the closet or under the bed? Isn't there some better form of accommodation? What, you know, like a mansion or a nice room? It doesn't make any sense to me why you would choose a closet with shoes and clothes hanging. That's goofy. It never occurred to me. I came one night to grow fed up. I had it. I was fed up with being afraid of the boogeyman. I thought, I can't go on like this. And using all the bad language that I knew, and I knew a lot as a kid and still know a lot. I was fluent in English and profanity. I knew some Latin, too, from being an altar boy, but profanity was my second major language. And I challenged that boogeyman, after cussing it out, to come out of the closet and try to do whatever harm it could do to me. I dared it to come out. No response. Okay, maybe he's not in the closet. Maybe he's under the bed. So now I focused my attention under the bed. It went through the same routine, using all the profanity I could muster, all the anger and bravado. Come on out. I dare you. And if you don't come out, you don't exist. No response. And then I dismissed as insultingly as I could the existence of this fictional threat. It was imagined. The thing I feared was made up. not only about a kid. There are some commonly accepted boogeymen that we blame for ill health and other forms of unhappiness today. Here they are. Our genes, immigrants, the other political party, other races, other religions, religions in general, government, they are the fault. They are the faults. Some people fear their genes. Because of my genes, I'm destined to have fill in the blank. That's a dreaded idea. That's like containing a time bomb that they give to themselves. They put the boogeyman right inside. Oh, the boogeyman is going to harm me, going to harm me. Not boogeyman, genes is going to harm me, going to harm me. Genes are the new boogeymen in the closet. Bruce Lipton, in his book, Biology of Belief, disputes this notion. He's like, whoa, folks. Genes don't control us. We control them. We control them. He points out the evidence that says our perceptions, our beliefs, the energy that we experience activate or don't activate our genes. The genes are just sitting there like blueprints in a file cabinet. They're not in control. They're just sitting there. We activate them. He describes the cell membrane as being the brains of a cell, not the nucleus. The nucleus is more like the storage cabinet with the blueprints. But the cell membrane is the smart part, is the brain. I find this really interesting. In Christ Returns, reveals startling truth. Christ refers to the consciousness of the cell membrane as understanding what to let in to the cell so it can grow and heal and be healthy and reproduce, and what to excrete so it can stay healthy and grow and reproduce. It's like, man, I like that. The consciousness of the cell membranes is fundamental to our health. Makes sense to me. As Bruce Lipton says, that stress from our perceptions either allows genes to be inactive or active, or it interferes with the cell membrane's consciousness and affects those genes. It turns on stuff that we would prefer it not to turn on. In other words, stress and our perceptions explain ill health. This is the end of part one of What Explains Ill Health. I'd like to end this service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version of the prayer from Letter 8 in Christ Returns, Reveal Startling Truth. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you're perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal, loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness, and as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.